from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, should money be taken from science labs to lessen the achievement gap? Berkeley High, identified as a school with the largest racial equity achievement gap in the state, is considering a controversial proposal to eliminate some science labs to free up more resources for struggling students. Berkeley High's Governing Council approved the proposal to address the achievement gap in which white students are outperforming black and Latino students. Funding resources for greater equity? We'll talk about it in the hour ahead with your calls and emails. Next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum. We're going to spend this opening hour of Forum talking about some proposed reforms at Berkeley High, but first, we're going to get an update on an education story we covered last month. We discussed the possible expansion of a Montessori program at one of San Francisco's public elementary schools, and while some parents and educators thought the program could benefit underprivileged students, other teachers and parents opposed the expansion, fearing it would push out the general education curriculum. Jill Tucker attended the board meeting last night. The issue was decided. Jill here with us. Update us.
Well, good morning. The board decided last night in a 6-1 vote to move the Montessori program into a vacant school in Pacific Heights, about six blocks away from Cobb Elementary, where it's been sharing classrooms with the traditional education program. It is a decision that will cost the district some money. They're going to have to open this new school, or open the closed school and make it a nicely painted new school for the Montessori program. And it means that both schools will be running at less than capacity for at least a few years, and that means it's going to be more expensive to run it than the money that they will get in to do so.
Compromise.
It was absolutely a compromise. Some folks were calling it the two-state solution, and it wasn't perhaps the most fiscally smart decision, but it staved off criticism from the community in Western Addition, the African-American families, who they had hoped to serve with the Montessori program. So it actually was a compromise. It was something that both sides were incredibly happy with, but fiscally, it's going to hit the district when they're facing a $90 million deficit for the next 2 years.
Well, fiscally, of course, all schools are being affected, and we're going to shift gears and talk about Berkeley High. As I said, that's the subject for this hour. And if you're more interested in finding out, or if, I should say you're interested in finding out more about this story, you can read it in today's Chronicle. Jill Tucker, who is Chronicle staff writer, who's with us in studio, did a piece on it. And a plan has actually been called to redesign things at Berkeley High School to close the achievement gap, and it passed Berkeley High's governing council and will go before the school board as an information item tonight. The proposal, which would eliminate science labs, or actually some science labs, to allow for more funding for students who are struggling academically, has created a great deal of controversy. And I should say that currently students in regular and advanced science classes are required to take one lab class before or after school each week. Advanced placement students take two. Extra classes are funded through a district parcel tax. And Berkeley High is the only public high school in the city of Berkeley, and it's one of the most diverse in the nation. It was the first high school of its size to desegregate and voluntarily integrate, and it has been identified as a school with the largest racial equity achievement gap in the state. So in this forum opening hour, we want to focus our attention on the ongoing controversy over high school redesign in Berkeley, which is aimed specifically at diminishing the achievement gap. And joining us is Jill Tucker to talk about this as well. We also have with us in studio a number of other people. Jill Tucker is here with us, and so is Peggy Scott, as a parent on the Berkeley High School Governance Council. We want to welcome you to the program. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Also welcome Marty Sicular-Mertens, who is the most senior member of the Berkeley High School Science Department. Welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Did I say your name right?
Yes, you did.
Good. And we're going to be talking with Karen Hempel, who is president of the Berkeley Unified School District Board of Education. I think we have you on the air, Karen Hempel, do we not?
Yes, I'm here.
Good to have you as well. I wanted to begin with Jill Tucker just so she could outline for us some of what we're talking about here with this controversy, and indeed it's become a major controversy. Some are blaming the media. The superintendent has a statement here, and he says the media has said eliminating science labs. Science labs are not really being eliminated.
That's right. There have been some reports, not in my story, but in other stories, that have talked about this as Berkeley's proposal to eliminate science labs. That actually is not the case. What they're talking about is moving science labs into the regular 1 through 6 period school day and moving them from the 0 and 7th period timeframes. Right now, most students at Berkeley High are required to take their science labs, as you said, either 1 or 2 times a week, either starting at 7:30 in the morning.
Before classes actually
begin.
Before
the first period actually starts, or at the end of the school day, starting at 3:15 or a little bit later and going till about 4:30. What they want to do is push those labs into the school day to save this enrichment money and spread that around a little bit more.
So I'll ask rhetorically why they won't come on the air, the principal won't come on the air and clear the air on this, or at least make it clear what is actually going on from his perspective. But why has it engendered so much controversy?
Well, I think it is pushing a few buttons when it comes to how we spend money in education. We don't have a lot of money in education. We're looking at budget cuts across the board. And there's this tug of war, perhaps a little bit, between spending the money to help those most at risk, those at risk for dropping out or not achieving and closing the achievement gap. That is the absolute priority nationally, statewide, locally, regionally, everywhere in education right now.
This is more budget woes, really, we're talking about.
It is, and how you spend that money. But there's also the other side saying, well, what about the kids that aren't at risk? What about the kids that we need to succeed in science and math and technology? Shouldn't we be spending the resources for those students? Some people have talked about it dumbing down the curriculum. Right now, Berkeley students get more science education than virtually any other students in the state. They're getting extra time in science with these labs. But no one likes a takeaway in education.
Well, the other thing that seems to be of concern is that the change was done, at least so the allegations go, in secret, that it was just kind of presented, fait accompli, and there's no idea of how this money is going to be spent on struggling students who need the money, supposedly.
Well, it's part of Berkeley High's overall redesign to create more equity and address the achievement gap. There's other aspects that they're dealing with. They've been making these decisions on the School Governance Council, and some of those decisions then are going before the board. This is an issue where they voted in the Governance Council, and now it will go before the board for a vote, they're saying, on February 3rd. So it's part of this other process. I think it took people by surprise. It was sort of not really explicitly stated when they made the decision. They basically just said the enrichment funds are going to be spread around rather than saying we're getting rid of these extra science labs.
Well, Karen Hempel is with us. He's president of the Berkeley Unified School District Board of Education. And how specific is the money going to be spread around, or how specific do we know the plans are where that money is going to be spread around, Karen Hempel?
Well, first of all, I'd like to back up a little bit because I really appreciate your reporter's summary of this issue. It's one of the best that I've heard, as opposed to what we have been hearing in the mass media that, you know, Berkeley's crazy, they're how's eliminating science lab, going to bridge the achievement gap, and you know, those are the kind of headlines that we're seeing. But really,
I have to ask again, if we're seeing those kind of headlines, why the principal wouldn't come on and talk, or nobody would come on from the board and talk?
I'm here.
Not from the board, from the governing council.
You know, I really think that this was an issue that needs to be handled at the district level. It's important to make sure that the correct information comes from the correct people.
And I should say from the governing council that voted, because Peggy Scott is on the governing council, that voted the other way. Yeah, we couldn't get anybody to come here. I'm glad you're here, and I'm pleased to be talking with you about it. But I'm concerned about the fact that things have been locked down, really.
Well, I think that right now the superintendent is working with the high school to be able to develop a proposal that has, I would say, a broader input than perhaps the proposal that went forward. But what I want to say first is that I think we need to decouple the issue of funding to some degree from the need to bring science back into the school day. Because bringing science into the regular school hours, I was shocked that the only time that for most of our students at Berkeley High, the only available time to take a required component of a core academic class is outside of the regular school day. So if you're a student that has to take care of a sibling, taking them to school and picking them up, or if you're a student who has a job, or if you're a student in which there's some other outside activities, you don't have, you know, you're going to be impacted by only having science lab outside of regular school hours. This is certainly not best practices. It's certainly not the national standard is to have a required part of a, you know, core class only being offered in an optional period.
I understand that. Couldn't the district, though, simply lengthen the school day?
You know, that may be one of the alternatives. As I said, the superintendent right now is talking with the high school to come up with a proposal that is looking at maybe some other options, because the district would love to be able to maintain a lot of the benefits of having, you know, longer instruction time. And so is there a way that we can continue to have the longer instruction time in science, but making sure that all of our students are able to take lab, which is having that done during the regular school day?
There is a big attendance problem too, isn't there?
Yes, there is. There's also the problem is that if lab is canceled for whatever reason, because it's outside the regular school day, it's not covered by our substitute program. If there's no substitute teacher teaching that class, and so that class just doesn't happen.
Well, Karen Hempelgen is president of Berkeley Unified School District Board of Education. We also have one of the science teachers here, the most senior member of the Berkeley High Science Department. That's Marty Sicular Mertens. Your concerns on this, I mean, she said the attendance is bad and the classes are not given during regular time.
Well, we believe that the science labs provide more instructional time. They provide about 21% of the instructional time, and we think that this without this instructional time, the instructional quality would decline, the curriculum level would decline, the time allotted to hands-on lab activities would suffer. And as teachers, we care deeply about our students. So,
and it's not only, I mean, perhaps we can clarify another point here. It seems as if Mother's reporting says that white students are pretty predominant, but we're talking about many black and Latino students too, aren't we?
That's right. I teach AP Environmental Science. My classes are about 17.5% African American and 13.9% Latino. And I think that all of our students benefit from the science labs.
But will this help the achievement gap? I mean, from your perspective.
Well, I think that all students benefit from excellent, high-quality instruction. And so we want to offer the most high-quality instruction we can to all students. And we believe that this program has a proven track record. And we also think if we take the money away from this, which is proven, which is successful, and then allocate it without focus to something we don't know we're going to allocate it to. No one has a plan. It's like selling blue chip stocks and investing the money in lotto tickets.
You have no idea how this money is going to be spent to help struggling students or to lessen the achievement gap.
Not even
a vague idea.
No plan has been put forth.
And what about the fact that students aren't attending these labs or that the attendance is poor?
There is some trouble with attendance, but that's something we can improve, something we can work on and improve.
Does it diminish the possibility of performance of AP students, and would it lead perhaps more of those students, parents, to want to put them in a private school if these labs are taken away?
We believe that the Berkeley High Science program has been kind of emblematic of Berkeley High's academic excellence. And especially for many years, we had double period science, where we had even more instructional time. So right now, our AP classes have very high pass rates. They're 30 to 40% above the national average. And
you don't think these can be just integrated into the regular curriculum, the labs?
Well, we don't believe so. I mean, I have a letter here signed by 18 of our science teachers, and the overwhelming majority feel that they can't offer the same level of instruction, they can't promise the same AP pass rates without this extra time.
Karen Hempel, can I get you to respond to the fact that there seems to be no plan here, even though, as you said, perhaps it can be integrated into the curriculum?
Well, I would say that two things. One is I would probably differentiate between what might be a proposal for the AP science classes and what are the proposal for the regular classes, including college prep. Because it is oftentimes in schools that students are taking advanced placement classes. If, you know, if it's an English class, they have to do supplementary reading over the summer. So advanced placement classes are oftentimes part of that class, or all of that class is done outside of the regular school day. But the point that I want to make is that the regular advanced biology, chemistry classes are also, those science labs are also being conducted outside of the school day. And those are the ones that I'm most concerned about. And I would expect that the science department, you know, in their proposal may very well differentiate between, you know, how the core science classes that every student should be taking are done versus the classes that are more optional, you know, that are more of a choice. In terms of the equity grants, there's not been any decision that that is how that money is going to be spent. And in fact, the proposal that's going to be coming forth from Berkeley High and the science department on how to redo science labs, so, you know, science lab is more accessible during the regular school day, may very well depend upon funding from those very funds that we're talking about. So I think that there's been a real coupling of something that at this point is not coupled.
And you can say with some certainty that jobs would not be lost. Teacher jobs, yeah.
Teacher jobs may be lost because the state will probably be reducing the amount of funding that we already have. Right now, you probably are aware that school districts are being funded at 2005 levels. And given the current, I think it's at $20 billion deficit now, and the likelihood of the state having to pay back the furloughs that the courts have struck down, the redevelopment agencies, suing for not having their money taken away, and cities putting ballot initiatives so that money cannot be taken away, I think it'll be very surprising, though I would love for it to be the case, that education next year is going to take a huge, this in the next cycle is going to take a huge hit, and that there'll be districts who, you know, Berkeley was lucky. We laid off one teacher last year in the midst of other districts having huge layoffs. You know, whether or not if there's another round of cut, we have cut pretty much everything we can cut outside of the classroom. So this whole issue of teachers being laid off, I would be much more concerned about what will happen when the state budget comes out than that any proposal to change the way we do science is going to result in teachers being laid off.
Karen Hempel, again, is president of the Berkeley Unified School District Board of Education. Peggy Scott is also with us this morning in studio, a parent on the Berkeley High School Governance Council and one of those who voted against this proposal. And a lot of your concern had to do with the school site council. There was no school site council. And there's supposed to be, like, legally, isn't there?
Every public school in California must have a school site council according to the Ed Code, and there is no school site council at Berkeley High. We have a school governance council, and on that school governance council, we have 20 people on the school side and 4 parents. And parity means 50-50, and 20 to 4 doesn't sound like 50-50 to me. I should say 4 parents and 4 students, because at the high school level, the community half is defined as half parents and half students. So there actually are 8 of us, 4 parents and 4 students, but there are 20 on the school side. And there was a school site council on paper last year that never convened, never voted, never had any minutes, doesn't have any officers, and there isn't even one on paper this year. So that body that should have been voting on this plan that is very much about our school plan doesn't exist. And the body that did vote on it doesn't conform to any state standards of a school site council.
So in your decision to vote against the proposal, the redesign proposal, did it come down to science versus equity, or what did it come down to as far as you were concerned?
Well, I felt that there was a very odd kind of Sophie's choice that we were given, you know, that we were supposed to be choosing between science and equity. And part of my understanding of public education and the fact that I live in Berkeley, which I love, is that we should have both science and equity. I don't understand why anybody would think we would choose. And I commend President Hemphill for stating in writing that these two things should not have been linked. We should not have been linking the achievement gap to science. And that's what that plan did. And I thought it was a piece of faulty thinking, or it was posing the question in a way that didn't make sense to me. And I do want to say that plan was a four-part plan. I requested that we disaggregate it and vote on its parts, and that was not acceded to. So we were all told, even though we're supposed to have consensus, that this was going to be a straight up or down vote, yes or no, for support. The principal didn't even ask the SGC to vote to approve it. He only asked for our support, and he got a vote of support, but it wasn't unanimous. There was no consensus.
Well, we did get a statement from the superintendent, and that's William Hewitt, who says, at Berkeley High, students are currently required to attend science labs either before or after school for advanced placement classes and most college preparatory classes in nearly all other schools in California. Science labs are held during the regular school day. Science classes when students are required to be in school, avoiding any conflicts for students who work, participate in sports or other extracurricular activities, or are required to be at home before and after school. Now, that seems to be really the thrust of the argument here, that they're having to almost do extra work and the attendance isn't that good anyway. And so don't those have to be factored in?
Well, there's several different things here. One is there is some question about that attendance isn't very good figure. It does turn out that the teachers who tell their students that they have to show up have very good attendance rates. It has more to do with the teachers than it does to do with the students. And several of the teachers have been polling their students this week and said things like, "What do you mean only half of you are showing up?" They look at a class of 28 kids and they say, "Have any of you ever been to lab and there were only 14 kids there?" And the kids all look at each other and say, "No." So it depends on the teacher. The kids are showing up.
Well, you're one of those teachers, Marty Secular Mertens, and you say what on this score?
Well, I think that the science labs are helping all the students. I think we could improve our attendance. But I think that for the most part, it's reaching the vast majority of the students.
Well, we're going to go to the break. And before we do, I'm going to invite listeners to join us. Marty Secular Mertens, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. It was great to be here.
Again, Marty Secular Mertens is most senior member of the Berkeley High School Science Department. I want to thank you, Karen Hemphill, president of the Berkeley Unified School District Board of Education. Maybe a final quick word from you before we say goodbye to you?
Yes. I think that we need to really work together to be able to address this issue. As I said, you know, it got coupled in a way that really was unfortunate. And I do think, you know, to me the main point is that for many reasons, we need to have a required component of a core academic class conducted during the regular school day where there isn't barrier to some students accessing it, and that attendance will be higher. I've talked to parents who thought that lab science, the 0-7 period lab, was tutoring. And therefore, if their kid wasn't there, they didn't think that it was something that was required. And I think the science teacher said themselves that if only half the students are attending, you know, in a poll, that this points to the problem of having a required part of this class outside of the regular school hours.
Well, I thank you again, Karen Hemphill, president of the Berkeley Unified School District Board of Education. I invite those of you listening to join us. One of the big mysteries, of course, one of the big underlying stories is the money being cut back, but one of the big mysteries is what to do about the achievement gap. I mean, we've got one of the most diverse high schools in the nation and ongoing, actually, plummeting of performance at Berkeley High. You may have some thoughts on that as well. Feel free to join us. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about tough choices and tough choices that certainly lie ahead for public schools and schools in general. Berkeley High School is proposing to eliminate its before and after school day science labs in order to shift funds to help struggling students. And this angers some parents and teachers who feel that the science program is a model for the state. Berkeley is, in this state at least, perhaps the most diverse public high school, and also the public high school with the greatest achievement gap. Let's talk about that for a moment, Jill Tucker, if we can. Jill Tucker here with us is education writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, and we're also with Peggy Scott, parent of a Berkeley High School student and part of the governing council there. This is an achievement gap that sort of makes people kind of shrug their shoulders and say, what can be done? You've got all this diversity at Berkeley High School. Some are saying it's really a class problem, you know, it's the kids who live in the hills and all that sort of thing. But still, the fact remains that the Latino and Black students don't score as high as the white students. You've got white students who do poorly. You've got, you know, Asian American students who do poorly. But for the most part, it does fall along those lines. And what can be done? Everybody says, we're lost. I mean, that's why maybe there's no plan. They want to help struggling students, but where's the plan?
Well, you know, Berkeley High is a microcosm or a great example of the achievement gap nationally. And we have everybody from President Obama to the principal of Berkeley High trying to figure out how to do it. We have, you know, the Race to the Top plans coming down very soon that are specifically looking to address the achievement gap. We've been trying to address the achievement gap in California for as long as I can remember and have spent billions upon billions of dollars in reform efforts and other things to do it. The gap has not closed. Everybody's doing better, so we can at least have some good news in there. But at Berkeley High and across the state. But that gap is incredibly stubborn. And it seems that no matter what we try, we can't close it.
Here you got a school, though, that is known for its diversity, one of the first, I think the first school to integrate in the United States, or certainly one of them. And they're saying, that is, some of the parents are saying, you're pushing out the white students. You're going to make it less diverse. You're going to create more of a problem if you do this.
I think that that is one of those hot button issues that people are talking about. Berkeley High School has a good reputation. It has a great reputation for its science program. And I think there is concern that in trying to address the achievement gap and the academic performance of African American and Hispanic and low income and English learning students, we are ignoring the other students who aren't at risk. And that is at our own peril, that we won't be producing the best scientists or the best mathematicians or engineers because we've been trying to raise the bottom. And I think that that's why this issue has been so emotional in Berkeley and has drawn the attention, you know, nationally from a lot of people, because it's really hitting that issue at its core. And I think there's a fear in education from families that are not at risk, that are not poor, that they're being ignored in education.
Again, I want to read some of the superintendent's statement, and he says, the proposal from the principal and the school leadership is to integrate the labs into the regular school day, not to eliminate them, as has been reported by the media. Typically in California, college prep science classes meet only 5 times a week instead of 6 times, as many BHS science classes do. The proposal would bring instructional time in line with the rest of the state. However, this would decrease instructional time over the current practice at BHS, Berkeley High School, especially for AP classes, advanced placement. Note that it is common for AP classes to have more learning time by extending a course into 2 years or over the summer. And he goes on to say the principal and leadership team believe that by offering a full science program during the regular day, science classes will be more accessible to all students and that attendance and performance in science will improve. The proposal has received the approval, and Peggy Scott informs us that that's been changed to the support of the Berkeley High School Governance Council and is expected to come before the Board of Directors on February 3rd. You want to say something, Peggy Scott, about the achievement gap?
Well, the achievement gap exists all over the United States, and it is a tragic piece of our past that is still with us. One of the reasons that it is so pronounced at Berkeley High is completely tied to the fact that Berkeley has one high school. And in Berkeley, all of our kids go to school together. And that's part of what we who live in Berkeley love about our city. All our kids are going to school together. They're all really getting along pretty well. It's an extremely diverse school where kids socially can have different groups of friends, and many of them do. They'll have their, you know, their sports team friends and their jazz band friends and their, you know, art or dance friends or whatever, and they're not kind of locked into being with a particular clique the way a lot of kids are in a lot of other high schools.
So we were saying just yesterday, though, that you still see at Berkeley High, you see the Black kids together, you see the Latino kids together, you see the white kids together.
You see that all over America, and it is true, and you also see more diversity at Berkeley High. And that's why you see it in the achievement gap, because our kids are going to school together. You don't see an achievement gap in Kentfield or Piedmont. You don't see the achievement gap in the same way in Hunters Point, because in Berkeley, the kids at the top, many of them are children of academics, and the top of our achievement gap is extraordinarily high, partly because of all those kids of academics. We also have urban poor and a very diverse group of kids who are struggling and who didn't get a great start in school, and those are the kids who are struggling at the bottom. And in Berkeley, it has been defined that closing the achievement gap really means bringing the bottom up. And the problem is that it does seem and it does feel like what might be happening is trying to
decapitating from
down.
The top.
Yes, yeah. And that isn't how it's defined that we want to close the achievement gap. And why would we? You want to bring the bottom up. And there are teachers at Berkeley High who have wonderful plans for how to boost the bottom, or whatever you want to call it, bring those kids up. We all know it has to start in kindergarten and first grade. It has to start with reading and math. But when you talk about doing it at the high school, you're talking about a situation that already exists that does need a real kind of creativity to figure out how to help it. And I do want to say that I think every single person on that governance council cares about the struggling students. We just have some different ideas about how to address that gap.
Scores are going down at Berkeley High every year, though, aren't they, Jill Tucker?
You know, I haven't looked at their most recent scores, but they are going down. They're not the only school in the state, you know, where we're seeing that. And, you know, the participation of Hispanic and African-American students in some of the AP and advanced science classes is not good. And their scores are not great, even the ones that are in there.
Well, the figures I got, there are 17.5% black students, 13.9% Latino students in the AP classes. Which accounts for a third of the students in the student body in terms of people of color, young students of color. Let me get our callers on, though. Nancy, you're first up. Good morning.
Hi. I've lived in Berkeley since the 60s. My son went to Berkeley High, and he has been teaching chemistry there now for 11 years. And a number of years ago, we went through this before about cutting the science labs. It's always the science labs that want to get cut. And I have a lot of feelings and comments about this situation. I think by the time a child gets to high school and has had real problems in achieving, it's very difficult to then get them motivated and, you know, to change their academic success. A lot of it has to do with the parents. I know that, you know, that it's very difficult to get a lot of these parents involved, and I do not think that it is really all the school or even half the school's problem. It's just the home situations, and the school is, you know, is doing an uphill battle. But cutting, you know, cutting the science labs for achieving kids who, you know, who really need this background in order to, you know, achieve in college is terrible. And I know my son is very upset about this, and I'm very upset also as a parent, you know, a parent and just a citizen of Berkeley.
Nancy,
and
let me come in here because we've got Karen Hempel back on the line. We thought we had to say goodbye to her, but she's readjusted her schedule, and I'm grateful for that. She's a school board president over at Berkeley, and Nancy's
an African American parent of a child at the high school.
Okay, I'm glad you added that. Thank you. But you hear Nancy's frustration in this, and the feeling that the science is being targeted at the expense of other students. And I'd like to get you on the record here in response to that kind of feeling.
You know, I think this is a greater discussion. The achievement gap in Berkeley certainly is echoed throughout this state and out throughout this country. But in fact, in Berkeley, African-American students do worse than African-American students in the rest of our county of Alameda, and do worse than African-American students
within our state. So there's a specific issue in Berkeley that goes beyond what we see at the national and state level. And I think that that's something that needs to be stated because I don't think that that was really clear. I also say, and I agree, that just starting at the high school isn't going to close the achievement gap. And the school district has been working with the city on something called the 2020 Vision that was brought forward by a community group, United in Action, that was made up of a rainbow of education activists, parents, community members that were dedicated to bridging the achievement gap. And what the 2020 Vision is saying, equity, particularly educational attainment, is a community issue. And we as a community who were the first to voluntarily integrate our schools have to realize that the next step is that integration is not enough, that we actually have to take steps to make sure that all of our students have equal access to be successful at the highest levels. I certainly for 1 minute do not believe that equity means dumbing down anything. In fact, when people say that, it's hard for me not to have a visceral reaction of, so you're saying that I want less for my child than you do? So what the 2020 Vision is, and what the city realized was that if you look at crime statistics, in danger of being homeless or being inadequately housed, if you look at morbidity rates, if you look at mortality rates, it all boiled down to, did you get a high school diploma or didn't you? And so that was the city's motivation to respond to the community cry of United in Action to say, the city has resources, the school district has resources, the city and the school must work together to bridge this achievement gap. And we're talking pre-birth through at least 18 and probably 22. And that work has been going on. In fact, I think Peggy Scott has gone to some of these meetings in which we are looking at all of the academic programs that the school district does from preschool on. And the city is looking at, the city spends $22 million a year, which is almost a quarter of our school district, equivalent to a quarter of our school district budget on youth-related services. So whether it's public health nurses, whether it's after-school programs and recreation centers or summer programs, all of these are resources that we can use in order to help bridge the achievement gap. So all of our students have the ability to be ready to go to college, to be ready to be successful at the highest levels.
And again, Karen Hempel is president of the Berkeley Unified School District Board of Ed. And by the way, you can now leave any questions or comments on our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, and you can continue that, in fact, after the program is over. And you wanted to add something, Peggy Scott?
I'd love to. I just want to mention that there is a lot happening at Berkeley High, where Berkeley High is trying to address the achievement gap. It's not that nothing is happening. A great deal is happening. We want to assess what programs are working well, what programs maybe aren't working as well and need to be adjusted. There was a data presentation to the board just last month in which we saw that the overall test scores for everybody at Berkeley High have been steadily going down as against the county and as against the state performance since 2003. That's the sort of thing we need to look at. That's how you really serve your kids, is to say, hey, what are we doing?
That's not only an achievement gap, that's a gap in achievement.
That is a gap in achievement, and that's everyone. That's not just the African-American or Latino scores going down. All the scores are going down, and that's what really concerns many members of the board and certainly many members of the community right now. But the thing you need to know is that there is a lot happening. There are the small schools at Berkeley that are designed specifically for more personalization. We are trying to get more academic support classes in there. It's not that nothing is happening. The question on the table is, what are those things going to be?
Andrew, thank you for waiting. Join us. Good morning.
Hi. I'm bringing, I hope, a slightly more external perspective to this issue. I immigrated to California 10 years ago. I moved a company here. It was very successful. I've started and run multiple businesses in this state. And from my perspective, coming from a high-tax, modest little state in the Midwest that still manages to prioritize education, The system here just seems totally broken. The people in the system seem to lack perspective, and the amount of permissiveness and low standards, or the prevalence of permissiveness culturally and low standards, whether it be applied to students or faculty or curricula or whatever, just seems to be destroying the state from the inside out. And everyone talks about initiatives, et cetera, but, you know, because of property taxes and underfunding and all of that, it just seems like this state doesn't care about its children. It doesn't care about maintaining its momentum as a major innovative force. And when I hire people who are from California and educated here, so many of them, actually, my last company, were graduates of Berkeley, in good standing. I'm just amazed by kind of the mediocrity that has somehow seeped into this state that once was one of the leaders in public education. And a lot of people, you know, depending on where they come at this issue, they scapegoat one part of the problem, but sort of want to not hold themselves culpable. So if you're in the system, it's the funding problem. If you're outside of the system, it's the faculty, I think, or whatever, the low standards. I think we can quantify success. We've seen tons of models from people like Jeffrey Canada in Harlem. We know how to fix education. I think the state needs to look at actually taxing property in a fair way so that it's not just newcomers like me that pay high rates.
Andrew, you're going on a little long here, but I think we get the gist of your call, and I want to thank you for it. You know, he's expressing, again, the sense of the state going downhill, and there's great concern, Jill Tucker, I mean, because the money just isn't there.
Well, right. I mean, California, I think the last time I looked, was considered 48th in education spending in the country when you look at cost of living. And, you know, if we had all the money in the world, we wouldn't be talking about this today. So I think it really is, how do we spend this money? And I think people are looking at this thinking that...
Of course, they have a parcel tax in Berkeley.
They do have a parcel tax in Berkeley. And that's helping fund this. And I think that's what we've been relying on in education, is for locals to step up where they have money and put more money into the system.
And we have more calls. And Philip is calling from Berkeley, Berkeley High School teacher. Hi, Philip.
Hi. My name is Phil Halpern, and I'm the lead teacher of one of the four small schools. Mine is called Communication Arts and Sciences. And as a member of the SGC, I thought it was worth mentioning some data that was presented to the SGC just a week ago. And that is that by far the greatest percentage of kids who take science classes that have labs attached are white kids. And the problem is that African-American and Latino kids are enrolled in science classes that, in the majority, have no science lab attached. So when we talk about a more equitable look at the allocation of resources, we're talking about a fresh look at meeting the needs of all students at Berkeley High. Tradition tends to govern far too much at Berkeley High, especially because it necessitates a kind of a nostalgic look at history. We're trying to take a realistic look at our current student body, take a fresh look at the allocation of funds, and raise the question if science labs are equitable in who they serve and how well they do their job.
I'm glad you called in, because you represent the side for redesign. And as I said, we weren't getting enough response from that side. And Peggy Scott, let's get some response from you, what you just heard from Philip.
I was just as surprised as Phil to see those statistics. And what I found myself asking was, why are those students being counseled not to take lab science when you need lab science for a true college prep class? That was the most disturbing thing that I took away from that statistic. And Phil, I was just as surprised as you were. I think we really need to put this in context that Berkeley has a 10-year history of giving a lot of support to science, and that the parcel tax is the money that we're talking about for this specific issue today. It is a parcel tax, and what that means is the people with the biggest houses in Berkeley are paying the highest parcel tax. It was passed by, I think, 74% of the voters. People in Berkeley care about education, and they're willing to put their money where their mouth is. They voted it in. And we need to realize that if you talk about reducing science instruction by 20%, you're teaching the same amount of material in less time. And that isn't going to help struggling students, and that isn't going to help the students in the middle. That's just going to make their lives harder. And the kids who are already doing really well and the kids who have money who can go out and afford to get tutors. This is creating less equity.
Let's hear back from Philip. Yeah, go ahead.
The notion of teaching the same amount of content in 20% less time is exactly the kind of overcommitment to tradition that I'm talking about. When we try to do the same thing, whether it be in less time or more time, we are highly likely to replicate the failures of education in the past. We have to take a deep and fresh look, not only at how many minutes we allocate, but how we deliver instruction. I also think that the notion that counseling is the only thing that's going wrong in terms of getting students of color into high-level college prep classes is only one part of the story. Another part is the way instruction is delivered in the classroom, the sense of unwelcomeness that many students of color feel when they get into the classes. They often bounce right back to their counselor to ask for a different class, different teacher. We have to take a holistic view of what's not working for students of color. And part of that is what really has disappointed me and surprised me in this whole debate is that the proposal to move science labs from after school into the science classes themselves has been mischaracterized as an elimination of science labs. Another thing is that it's one part of a four-part plan. Nobody thinks there's a kind of a silver bullet fix to the problems we see in science education. In fact, the education across the disciplines. Instead, we're talking about a four-part plan that includes the implementation of advisory, the moving of lunch to after fourth period, which may seem trivial but actually isn't, and other steps like that, all aimed at addressing this problem in a more holistic way.
Well, Philip, I thank you for calling. I appreciate hearing from you. Here's Max, who says, do teachers receive additional compensation for before and after school instruction time? If so, clearly they'll resist change. Jill Tucker, do they? They do.
This does cost extra. The teachers are not doing this for free. They get paid money to teach those before and after school classes. And that's, as Peggy said, that's what the parcel tax is funding. It costs money to pay for these classes. But just to be clear, these are when they talk about reducing the instructional time, they're getting 20% more instructional time than other AP or advanced science students across the state. So this is extra additional time than what the vast majority of students in California are getting in their science classes.
Go to some more of our emails. Listener says, I'm appalled that the issue is whether there are after or before school labs in Berkeley to increase after school education equity. There are schools in the immediate area outside of Berkeley that are open only half days for grades 1 to 6 and have cut all school programs other than basic academics, sports, arts, clubs, etc. Due to funding, equity should be put across all public schools and help everyone. And another listener from our website writes, not to be missed, of course, is that the city of Berkeley is less than 10% African American. The achievement gap is largely the creation of out-of-district registration. Berkeley loves its problems. And Mike from Burlingame says, why do we always baseline achievement against whites? Should it not be against Asians, which are, as I understand it, generally ahead of whites in math and science achievement? Then there is a gap with both whites and blacks and Latinos. Another listener writes, science education is not a luxury, and cuts to science education will only increase the achievement gap. This may not be evident by the data being used because many standardized tests do not measure science content. We need to move past using STAR tests as a measure of student achievement, take a more holistic view of what education means, and support the achievement of all students in all content areas. Do not cut core academic resources for underperforming students. Doing so can only increase the achievement gap. And Dave, who identifies himself as a parent of a child across the bay, says, has there been a change in administration fairly recently? I have a sense that change it or near the top can have odd effects on the faculty and the students. Maybe you might address that, Karen Hempel, and also address something else that I learned, which was that there may be some have suggested there may be some payback in this, some resentment because of a episode that occurred last year that involved science teachers.
You know, I really can't address that. I mean, a lot of what I'm not even quite sure that I know what you're referring to.
No, Peggy Scott is nodding her head vigorously here, so we'll hear from her on this. But let me go back to the initial question I asked you then, if you would.
Can you repeat that? I'm sorry.
I'd asked, once again, just in response to a listener's email, if there have been administrative changes at or near the top that may account for some of these new redesigns that are being proposed.
No, the principal's certainly been there for quite a few years, for probably about 7 years. Our superintendent's been there for 2 years, so I'm not sure that that would be a factor in this. I think that what I heard from one of your readers is that, you know, Berkeley loves its problems, and the politics of Berkeley High rival the politics of anybody that I've ever known. And I think a lot of times that, unfortunately, issues get polarized, and people take positions based upon more than just what's being discussed. And there are a lot of commonly held beliefs and opinions expressed that make it oftentimes very difficult to hold a rational discussion.
Well, I think we've been having a rational discussion in spite of that. I know there's certainly a lot of polarization on this and a lot of emotions, as you've suggested. But, Peggy Scott, can any of this have to do with that scandal that I alluded to? Because it came out in the press.
There were front page stories last year about science teachers at Berkeley High. And there are a lot of parents in the community who have asked if this is about retaliation. Of course, there's no real way to answer that question. I just want to respond to one thing that Jill talked about, which was students across the state taking science classes, and open this up a little bit more. A friend of mine's daughter started at UC Davis this fall, and she was taking lab science. She went to Berkeley High, and there are many, many kids in her lab science classes who took one lab a year to pass their lab science classes. They're now in laboratory science classes, and they don't know the gloves, the goggles, the Bunsen burners. We have to remember how far down California is in terms of education, and it's important to do everything we can to bring our education up from that level, and Berkeley has a 10-year history of giving to science and supporting science, and board policy has supported it.
Well, you've got the last word here, Peggy Scott, because we're out of time, but I want to thank all who participated in this hour. I think it's been most enlightening, and I appreciate all of you being with us. Peggy Scott is a parent of a Berkeley High School student and on the governance council there. Karen Hempel with us by phone is president of the Berkeley Unified School District of Education, Board of Education, also parent of an African-American son in the Berkeley School, and Jill Tucker was with us.
Who's an honor student, by the way.
Well, thank you for that. Jill Tucker, education writer for The Chronicle, and we also had Marty Sicular-Mertens with us. In the next hour, Grill Marcus.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.